There's another thing I wanted to ask you about, or Jules pointed out, that in the jacket, I think it's the jacket for the memoirs of von Hildebrand, his wartime memoirs that are coming out also this year. Is that, it is, am I right, just the memoirs of his fight against Nazism and communism?
That's right, okay. Together with some of the papers that he wrote against Nazism when he was in Vienna. So there's some writings of von Hildebrand plus memoirs of his
And that's struggle. Coming out under what title?
That's coming out under the title of My Struggle with Hitler.
Okay.
With Random House at the end of this year.
I think it was in a proof that we saw for the jacket of that book where the remark was made that von Hildebrand was a sort of forerunner of Vatican II.
Yeah.
And Jules said at that point, I would love to hear John
flesh
that out for us a little bit. In what ways do you see von Hildebrand as a forerunner of Vatican II?
Yeah. Well, let's see. I can think of four respects in which you could reasonably count him as a significant forerunner. The most obvious respect is with regard to the teaching on marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the chapter on marriage in Gaudium et Spes, where the Church declares the enactment of love between man and woman is a distinct meaning of the conjugal union, not just reducible to the procreative power of the conjugal union. And so that acknowledgement of this love dimension of the conjugal union as fundamental to the marital act and irreducible to the procreative meaning, that is a certain development of doctrine, and that is certainly clearly prepared by von Hildebrand's writings back in the 20s in Germany on man and woman and marriage and purity and sexuality. So in that respect, he certainly, if you think of Gaudium et Spes's teaching on marriage, von Hildebrand is one of the first you would think of as pioneering that work in the previous decades. But then there is also the Declaration on the Jews, and there's a new book by a Berkeley historian, John Conley, called, I think, From Enemy to Brother, A History of the Vatican Council, Nostra Aetate, the Declaration on Non-Religion, Non-Christian Religions, and especially on the Jews. And Conley, who has no special connection with von Hildebrand, has argued that the fight against anti-Semitism by von Hildebrand in the 30s got down to points of principle that really effected a fundamental break with a kind of long-standing residual anti-Semitism in the church. And so he counts von Hildebrand as one of the two or three most important 20th century figures in reconfiguring the relation of the Catholic Church and the Jews. So that would be a second respect in which... And then, you know, with regard to Christian philosophy, there are a number of places where the council documents speak of forming, especially on Catholic universities, of you know, philosophy in the Catholic tradition. And it's significant that in these passages, the Council Fathers speak simply of the ever-valid tradition, philosophical tradition of the Church, and not just of the Thomistic tradition. And I think von Hildebrand, having done such fruitful work, fruitful for the Church, on the basis of his phenomenological personalism at a certain distance from the Thomistic mainstream, that opened, I think, the way to seeing that there's a place in the church and in the transmission of the philosophic tradition of the church for voices like that of Van Hildebrand. I think he sort of, by his work, demonstrated that we have to think of Christian philosophy now in broader than Thomistic terms. So there he is maybe not the only, certainly Newman demonstrates the same point. Among others, he would be a forerunner of that accent of the council. And then finally, in Gaudium et Spes, you have in the first part an expression of esteem for earthly goods, which sounds a little different from what we've heard for 20 centuries. A certain maybe more positive talk about earthly goods, a certain talk about a relative autonomy of earthly goods and earthly laws governing them. And it's in connection with the council saying that science and its study of nature and the secondary causes of the world does not have to be at odds with the Catholic faith. And there, I think, Van Hildebrand, with his value philosophy, he sends his distinction between worldly goods and earthly goods, played an important role in sensitizing Christians to a certain God-given excellence of finite earthly goods. That you can't, in other words, the idea that every non-religious good is just to be used instrumentally for salvation. Gaudium et Spes moves away from that position, and Van Hildebrand rejected it very strongly, though he always affirms, you know, the incomparable place of the supernatural and the ultimate and final glory. Still, he will not think of earthly goods as all of them, like the love between man and woman, as just instrumentally related to reaching one's final end. So that new tone in talking about this world, even a certain, as I said in a paper I gave last year, a certain this worldly focus in Gaudium et Spes. Some have seen that, you know, as a dangerous departure, but I see it as a certain enrichment of the Christian tradition, and one could definitely count Van Hildebrand as having contributed to that new sensibility in the church. So those would be four points of...
That's great. I have two thoughts that I want to run by you and see what you say that also strike me in a different way, not so much his philosophical works as his way of being a Catholic. I have noticed sort of in my, I guess you could say, my indirect encounter with him through what I've written, through getting to know his wife, and hearing so many stories from his life. One of the things that strikes me is he had a remarkable, in contrast with what comes across in a lot of the pre-Vatican II cultural Catholicism, he seems to me he had a remarkable confidence in the lay vocation.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And a remarkable freedom, even though he had an immense reverence for priests, he had a remarkable freedom from clericalism, which seems to me... to have been a serious problem that we're still dealing with a little bit in the yet to fully overcome so maybe you could say something about that if that rings true to you.
That would maybe be a fifth point of contact between Van Hildebrand and the council. This idea that that it's not just priests and consecrated religious who are called to a serious religious and a total religious commitment, but that every baptized believer is called to it.
Yeah.
In other words, the old idea that if you're really serious about your religious commitment, you join some
convent
form of religious
yeah.
life. And if you just want to be saved, but are content with a mediocre Christianity, then you get married and live as a layman. That, of course, never officially taught, but something like that certainly got transmitted over the generations,
yeah.
Which you called a certain clericalism, sort of reserving perfection for people who were ordained or consecrated in some way. And von Hildebrand, you know, in his beautiful work, Transformation in Christ, he thinks he's writing something for every baptized believer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not just written for priests and nuns. So that idea of the Christian, the full Christian vocation being offered to all baptized believers, that rich, significant teaching of the Council, that's already in von Hildebrand too. So yes, let's put that as a fifth point.
And he would give these liturgical evenings. So
yeah.
What in Munich? Didn't
that's
he do
right.
that before?
In Munich, in Vienna, and then also in New York.
In New York.
He would. He had a great love of the liturgy and would give evenings where he would reflect on the readings or on the meaning of a given feast day. And but, you know, he didn't feel like he was sort of playing the priest. He thought
right.
that this was a legitimate thing for a committed layman to do, and most of his listeners were lay people.
And wasn't there even a time when, I seem to remember a story where a bishop was sort of grumbling and didn't like these lay, and he just had a supreme confidence that this is a perfectly valid thing for
yeah.
a lay person to do.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not teaching authoritatively, I'm giving
right.
reflections, and so
that's
he
right.
he had peace about
that's right.
just continuing, whereas I think many Catholic consciences were trained at the time to think
yeah.
you can't,
right.
you didn't feel that freedom.
Yes.
you know, to,
right, yeah. No, he, I suppose there were critics of it, but nobody talked him out of it.
Yeah.
He didn't feel quite certain that this that he was living out his vocation as a baptized Christian,
yeah,
and not doing anything special that would require a special calling.
And maybe another thing that's occurring to me now is, and maybe not, not so much Vatican II as the post-Vatican II, but emphasis on the dignity of women. It seems that he
yeah,
had such
yeah.
a tremendous insight
right,
into the
that's
complementarity
right.
between the sexes,
right.
the dignity, the equal dignity
right.
of women and her particular
right.
mission vis-a-vis men and men vis-a-vis women.
Right,
and that
right,
also
yes.
I see a certain forerunning to
yeah.
the theology of the body and
right.
John Paul's teaching there.
That's right. That's very true. He's what you would mainly find in von Hildebrand would be not so much the equality of man and woman that he takes for granted that they're both persons, but the complementarity of man and woman. And there are a lot of passages where you would almost think that he sees in woman some a fuller kind of human being, because his wife was just telling me that they once had a talk about whether he had known more great men or great women in his long life. And he said clearly he had known more outstanding women on the grounds that he always found women to be more fully integrated than men. That he knew men with intellectual power and who had done some astonishing thing and were very interesting to talk to, but commonly they were completely lopsided human beings. Whereas the eminent women he had known were, it came more natural to them to be fully integrated and outstanding, not just intellectually, but affectively and in all the important areas. So that sense of complementarity of man and woman, and you might say the genius, what John Paul has called the genius of woman, that he
He recognized them, fully enjoyed it, seems, and revered it in the right.
Yes, he saw it and revered it and understood it very deeply. So in that sense, he speaks to our contemporary issues of sex and gender. Yeah.